The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
And welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Annie Fry. We're getting so close to the new year. Happy New Year to you and your family. Joining us now is a fentanyl expert, also former White House homelessness czar. We're going to talk to him about both of those things, Dr. Robert Marbit. Thank you so much for joining us in St. Louis today.
Thank you so much for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't know where to start first. So let's start homelessness, because St. Louis has had problems. And I've had conversations with people that have really dedicated a lot of their adult life to try to help homelessness in cities like St. Louis. And what you find are a couple of common problems along other cities. And you see fentanyl being a part of that, because people get their certain addictions or whatever it may be, and it changes their life, and drugs change people's lives, and sometimes circumstances that have nothing to do with them. They did nothing. They could have had a great paying job, and next thing you know, it's just one loss of a job and you're out on the streets. And there's so much that you can find these topics intertwined. When you were working homelessness on a national scale and you were kind of one of the national czars on it, what was your approach? How do you approach homelessness in America?
Well, the most important thing you have to do is understand the problem in the first place. And if you look at what's going on in the streets, and I've been to St. Louis probably dozens of times, and what you see on the street is untreated mental illness with co-presenting substance abuse. It's not really recreational drug use. It's self-medicating drug use for the most part. There's a small 7, 8, 9% recreational use, but for the most part, they just find the cheapest drug available to try to numb their conditions. And so you can't address homelessness unless you address substance use and, candidly, the fentanyl issue, because fentanyl has become the cheapest drug on the street in most places in America now.
Yeah, and I did a late night talk show, and I would talk to people who were homeless. They had phones, and sometimes they would just be staying with someone else, or they would call in and talk about their experiences. And one thing I remember a person telling me is they feel safer on the street than they do some of the shelters, because they're understaffed, and they find that there's so much drug use in these shelters in the shadows or the stairways or whatever it is that they don't feel safe around them. So if they're trying to stay clean, they find their best option is to be out on the streets, where at least they know they can be alone and not around that sort of thing. I'm sure you've heard stories like that.
And that really changed in 2012 when the federal government told agencies like nonprofit, like Salvation Army, Rescue Mission, Haven for Hope, and Alvin Chapman Center, what have you. The federal government said, if you're going to receive federal government money, you can no longer have requirements inside your facility. So you can't have a clean and sober shelter. You can't have safety and security. You can't have rules and requirements. You can't say you have to go to class, you have to go to treatment, you have to go to recovery. And it totally messed the system up. And think about this. If you get a federal Pell Grant, we require you to attend class. Most places, it's you have to have at least an 88.5% attendance. You have to have at least a C grade. You have to finish in a certain period of time. We do that with unemployment insurance. We do it with TANF. We do it with Pell Grants. But when it comes to the welfare system connected to homelessness, we said we're just going to give you vouchers. We're going to give you free gas cards, food cards, et cetera, but have no requirements for treatment recovery. And it just makes no sense. And it just, when the federal government made that change in 2012 under the Obama-Biden administration, it just totally tied the hands of agencies who want to focus on treatment and recovery to help get you out of homelessness forever.
Wow. And, you know, there's an advocate that has spent most of his life helping and advocating for the homeless here in St. Louis. His name's Larry Rice, and he does it with a faith-based side of it. He's run a shelter for, well, 40 years? It's been a long time. But he's done it in a way where he hasn't had to accept government funding for it because he wants to have that, you know, we'll bring you in, but we're going to, you know, we're going to put you in front of God, too. We want to be able to help you spiritually as well. And it was a very successful thing. And he told me something changed right around the time you're talking about it. He said that all of a sudden, the government fought him, as in they wanted to make sure he, as an independent person that was running this as a ministry through his church, made it as hard as possible for him to have a homeless shelter. And they harassed him so much to the point where it's like litigation after litigation just to try to reopen the shelter. And something else, I'll tell you, it made some national news. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but every night they would go around and people with his church would try to find homeless people on the street, one, to check in on them to make sure they're still alive and, you know, they need anything. But the other thing was to hand them food. Well, they were ticketed by the city. Police gave them tickets because they didn't have a proper food handling license to give sandwiches to the homeless. So they ended up fighting that one in court, too. But you probably have seen some cities, in St. Louis included, that they do everything they can to make independent help of the homeless as hard as possible.
And that repeats itself over and over around the country. And we've made it very hard for the faith-based community to do what they know how to do well, which is to get people through treatment and recovery. And think about this. The homelessness really started in America shortly after the Civil War. The federal government did not get into the homelessness business until the Reagan administration, so 1987-ish is when the federal government formally got into the homelessness recovery business. But faith community, the Salvation Army, back then the Red Cross, the rescue missions, all started shortly after the Civil War and helped in the world of homeless for 120 years. And by the way, our problem was much better handled by them. And then the federal government came in and said, we're with the federal government. We know more and we can help you. It's the old Ronald Reagan, you know, nothing more scary than somebody in a suit says, I'm with the federal government and I'm here to help you. And it really did change things. And it made it where you couldn't do what you knew worked. And what we know works is treatment, recovery, allowing the faith community when they want. That's not the only solution, but you have to allow the faith community to come in and do what they know works. Let the secular community come in too when they want to, and focus on programming. And all I know is if you're experiencing homelessness and we make it easy for you to take drugs, we don't put you into treatment programs. We don't put you into job training. We don't put you into job readiness. Why in the world would you expect recovery to happen if we make it much easier to get high and harder to get treatment? My mantra is we need to make it easy to get treatment, hard to get high.
That's the problem nationwide. There's such it's like a cult-like thinking in a way when you have this legalization of marijuana in such a grand scale where it becomes so readily available to people. And part of what we see too, and, you know, I'm up in Detroit now and I get opportunities to luckily do shows here in St. Louis where I'm very familiar with it. But you talk to superintendents in schools and they talk about these kids getting a hold of their parents' gummies and things because they look like candy, or they'll bring it into school and share it. And they're saying there's an epidemic of sharing these drugs in schools right now. And I keep thinking, we're glorifying this stuff on a national scale. We're legalizing it and making it easily inaccessible. And what kind of problems is that going to bring when people are celebrating that?
Well, let's not just talk weed and marijuana. If you go from L.A. all the way to Seattle and parts of Hawaii, parts of Chicago, a few other places around the country, Philadelphia had this problem, where they were either totally legalizing hard drugs or not prosecuting hard drugs, literally not prosecuting fentanyl use. And in San Francisco, you had the health department actually creating a site where you could go use fentanyl. It's not just low-end drugs. It's high-end drugs. And if you do that, it's not a wonder to me we have the death rate we have. I don't think it's a surprise at all when you totally legalize the high-end drugs and said we're going to stop prosecuting it.
Yeah, and it's such a weird position to be in because you're looked at as the bad guy when you advocate against these things because they say, oh, you're just not with it, right? It's, you got to get with the times, old man. Those things have changed from now on. Like, everything's got to be this party, and you just have to go along with it no matter if it's destroying people's lives. And that's what drives me crazy about all of this, too, is that we're watching things spiral out of control in real time, and people are still on that side.
Let me give you one stat, and this is when I heard this stat and processed it, is when I said, that's when I went and started the movie Fentanyl Death Incorporated. Here's the stat. More people have died from fentanyl only, not any of the other drugs, just fentanyl in America in the last 5 years than all men and women in the American 7 branches of armed services, plus the intelligence agencies for the last 100 years. So World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, global war on terror, Gulf War I, Gulf War II, UN. Add all those fatalities up of Americans, more people have died with fentanyl in the last 5 years in the United States.
Oh, wow.
Think about
that
number.
Else.
And we've legalized it. We said it's okay to do it. It has the highest death rate that we've ever had. Drugs are not what they were in the 1960s. Fentanyl is the most lethal, deadly drug ever created on planet Earth. And you have parts of America saying, let's legalize it. Let's not prosecute it. In fact, let's have the health department provide your straws and your foil and your pipes. It makes no sense in my mind at all. We've lost the common sense.
Yeah, you have seen that. You've seen where, in California in particular, it's government-sanctioned crack pipes. And this is part of it, too. Before, you would read the official documents of what they were going to provide to people, and you would bring it up, and you were called a conspiracy theorist. There's no way a government agency will ever do that, but we're at the point where they say, well, we need to, number one, be compassionate and understand their problem. So this is our way of reaching them. At least we can get in front of them that way. And the other thing they argue is that if they're getting it from us, we at least know it's clean, the syringes, the things like that. So this may actually help prevent further outbreaks. If they're getting clean stuff from us, we know they're going to use anyway. And that drives me crazy, too, that we're using taxpayer money and we're using our dollars and resources to fund drug habits.
And that assumes, you know, what you, and I totally agree with you 100%, and what the other side is saying is we can make fentanyl safe to consume, and we can make the supply of fentanyl safe for the consumer. You cannot make fentanyl safe. 2 to 3 grains equivalent of salt will kill you. 1/15 of a rice grain of fentanyl will kill you. You can't make something that lethal safe. But the other side is saying, oh, let's provide it for you. Let's give you an environment to do it. And why is the death rate skyrocketed? Because we're making it, so easy to get high. And we should be spending our money and time and government taxpayers helping you get into recovery, help you beating the habit, and help you get a job. That's what we know works. Instead of saying, let's have, if you, in fact, right now in America, if you have a severe drug habit, you jump in front of the line to get housing vouchers faster. Now, not slower, faster. And we wonder why the death rate is doubled in California and most of the West Coast. And it's because people are going into these federally subsidized housing rooms and getting high and dying. It makes no sense at any level of common sense.
Yeah, what you find in going back to the faith-based organizations, a lot of times they prioritize women and children who are trying to escape a situation. So they're looked at as, okay, this is vulnerable and we want to help that child, so we're going to help that person get out. But you don't see the prioritization. What you find is that they just don't care. In a lot of ways, they would rather give you a voucher than help you. But let's look at this too. What do you do with the ones that don't want help? You find that they don't have the drive. They don't really have the need. They see they're perfectly content with being homeless and taking drugs, and they just don't want to be helped. What do you do in situations like that?
Well, the good news, and I know this number both from what I did when I was in the White House and when I did it on the streets as a consultant. In most communities, that number is a little below 20%. There's a handful of communities that gets into the, you know, high 20s, 28-29%. But that still means 2/3 to 3/4 of the people want help and treatment. So let's focus on the people who want help, want treatment. Let's get them into the program. When you finish working through all of that group, then you can focus on the recalcitrant group or the shelter resistant or treatment resistant. And the great news is the Supreme Court has a new ruling called City of Grants Pass versus Johnson. It came out just last July. And before, your police departments where hands were tied. They couldn't do anything with that recalcitrant group, that resistant group. Now they can. And so we now have tools to do it. And so we should focus on doing that. But let's start first with all the people who want help and can't get it, because in San Francisco, they spend all their money making it easy to take drugs, and they have very little treatment programs. They've actually been reducing their treatment and providing more what's called safe consumption sites. Some parts in America is called safe injection sites. And we just got it totally backwards. And let's not make it a right-wing or left-wing thing. Let's make this a common-sense approach.
You are a fentanyl national expert. You are also a senior producer on a new documentary called Fentanyl Death Incorporated. Do you mind holding on after the break? I'd love to talk to you more about this documentary and the things you cover in it.
Absolutely.
Dr. Robert Marbit, you can find him online if you do a search, but look for Fentanyl Death Incorporated if you want to learn about the most comprehensive documentary ever produced on the fentanyl crisis, and boy, does it apply to the streets of St. Louis. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Annie Fry. Don't go anywhere on 97.1 FM Talk. The music, the memories, and keep the